Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
podcasts while walking. I'm going to try and talk about creating a children's book for a launch of a space education installation. The installation is called the World Wide Museum. I'll talk about that a bit later. So just to put things in context, I've just recently spoken to someone called Susan and explained a little bit about cognitive rehab and just slowly plodding away, not trying to get anything done too quickly, just getting it done nice and solidly. And part of this is learning to do podcasts and integrate podcasts with various things. Now, it's probably about 10 o'clock at night and I'm walking a fair distance from Glenbrook up into to Blaxland, past Blaxland High, a kilometre or so, to the gym. And when I get to the gym, I'll do an hour or so on a walk of cognitive rehab. This is part of the stuff going forward. And also part of cognitive rehab is doing this podcast. And part of cognitive rehab is building the circuitry and the program language to actually take podcasts and broadcast it as a broadcast. Is it a simple feat? Well, it took me a while to get going. And also part of that is some of the instruments that you saw. The darkened quantum oscillator, I was able to bring that in for you to see. And it was quite interesting because you wanted it reduced to the very basics. And I hadn't actually quite done that, so I'm sort of working on that together. And what often happens is that I'm working along in a whole series of places, and pretty much like I do on a lab bench, I get things together which might work together and I sort them out. And that's happened a little bit there, in terms of I had a whole range of things just to show, to sort them out and try to arrange them going forward. And sort of learn basic things that you get a sort of the idea of the Concept Institute, where you actually, this is focusing on the concept, keeping true to the concept, and not focusing too heavily on people's response to them, the social response or individual response, because they go hot and cold, and it's very hard to steer a complex concept through when people are thinking in a certain way. They're not thinking in the concept regime. They're sort of thinking socially how this fits in, and they have a certain time they can sit with a concept before they will either go forward or switch off. And this is sort of like the fundamental difference in that people don't contemplate, they actually ruminate. So they have the idea in their head live, and part of live is keeping it, either the idea active or they try and push it out of their head, which is very effective for, I suppose, a non-recording sort of live a short-term memory way of living. And slightly different to that is where you've got a concept and you can't work it forward, so you either leave it, you do things which will eventually advance the concept, whereas people don't take ownership of a concept and then they abandon it. And this has happened a little bit with this worldwide museum. I've tried to push it various distances forward, all the time looking at the positive things forward from the work of it, and go so far forward and then people lose interest in it. And the reason they lose interest in it, I don't know. They don't discuss it with me, they just don't call back after a certain while, and you're left with the actual concept and people having lost interest in it a little bit. And this is where sort of a different strategy to do with concepts comes into it. So you'll hear the huge amount of trucks roaring down past Glenbrook. So hopefully you can do something about that. Sorry, that will probably give listeners away to who I'm actually speaking to. But so the slightly different approach to say, should I consider this concept? Now, externally people think, can I invest it? I've got to weigh it up and do everything but actually analyze the concept and see whether it's mathematically rigorous. And that is something you got to really accept, that someone who has maths and has mathematical rigor, that's not just, you just don't calculate something like a computer or an adding machine and produce an answer. You have a emotional commitment to the correct answer and a commitment in the longer term. So in this case, there is this fundamental strategy of how do we teach people about the universe. And now the answer is, people say, traditionally have been to scales of 10. Imagine 10 times bigger, 10 times bigger. And after you do, I suppose, 23, 10 times bigger, you get something to the scale of the universe. And the end point is that by the second or third time you say 10 times bigger, people's cognitive capacity is overloaded. And that's successful view, the actual argument that the size of the universe is beyond your comprehension. However, we now have tools, mathematical tools, which bring it within our comprehension. It's just not comprehensible to people without those mathematical tools. And diplomacy says, well, you should perhaps ignore that and go with it's incomprehensible. However, that being said, there's some basic techniques that you can use to make something comprehensible. So a city might be large, but you can get a map. The countries on Earth may be big. I have an atlas. There are these representations which allow us to go through there. And what happens is that although people don't get really carried away with the maths and how it goes, they use it as a tool. And so rather than understand it deeply, they understand it superficially as a tool. So you may have a home you're renovating, so you can see the scale and the size of it. You have a plan of it. So similarly for the galaxy, you can put a plan of the galaxy and spread that out, wrapping the entire Earth with it. That's the fundamental idea. And then with the malice of forethought, you can actually add things to it by saying, well, there's a scale technique which you use to the 1 to 1,000, 1 to 1/10, 1 to 1/100th scale, sticking on the metric. So 1 to 1 trillionth scale universe or galaxy wrapped around the surface of the Earth. Now, at this stage, people, I think they're A, content with their, they have a rationale of ignorance. So, and a behavior associated with ignorance. So if they haven't understood it so far, and they're in an Australian society which celebrates ignorance, they'll turn their back on it. I think that's what's really happened. However, there's another feeling that if you see a way of your thinking which isn't ignorant, there's this immediate feeling that surely that conflicts with my worldview of how Australia is, so it can't happen. And if you think mathematically, there's a set of people who think that, and you're not going to convince them, just leave them there, and we're going to pull it away. with saying it can be done. Now, part of it can be done is the 1 to a trillion. So a trillion is a million million. So if I shrink down the galaxy a million times, and then I shrink that model down a million times, the galaxy will fit neatly within the diameter of the Sun. How about that? And our star, our Sun, will be the size of a tiny little bead, a pinhead, a map pinhead, or a cashew. A cashews on a cupcake. The importance about that is that the idea of getting an object, and once you get an object and you ingest it, there's a whole series of other cognitive processes which open up, which stop, you know, is it edible? Can I share it? There's a whole series of things once you cross the eating aspect of it, and that will come a bit further forward. Then on that scale, if our nearest star, sorry, if our Sun is placed in Glenbrook, at that scale, 1 to a trillion or tiny scale, so rather than 1 to a trillion, another generic term is tiny. Now, you've got to actually understand this, that the word, a word substitute for a scale is often used because the scale is confusing, but the word tells you so much more. So if I say Barbie scale, you automatically know how big things are going to go. If I say, I don't know, teddy bear scale, let's speak of doll scale, or, there's Shopkin scale, that type of stuff, we automatically know what that means. So there's a sort of a proxy for the word scale, which is bigger than that that's described. So I would say tiny. If we have this tiny scale galaxy, the full scale galaxy would fit across our Sun. So the galaxy is 100,000 light years side to side, just from the Monty Python song. But that's how wide our galaxy is. I think 2 trillion stars, 2 million million stars, lots and lots of stars, and our so 100,000 light years. You have to understand that there is a metric unit. We can't use kilometers, we use a PM, petameter. It's called petameter, and this, the galaxy is a million petameters across, and if our 1 to a trillion scale works, a kilometer of map is equal to 1 petameter, and it means that the galaxy, our nearest star to us, is a tiny fragment of a star, a little bit, about 1.7, not twice as big, but a little bit bigger than Jupiter. Hot, it's got a few things, it's got a planet about it. It's called Proxima. So that makes sense. Proxima is the name, Sol is the name of our star, and Proxima is the next one. And we're going to start that at Blackheath. And the idea is that the general work for setting up at Glenbrook is set up, and they've decided to walk away from it. Okay, then I've had an inkling, a little inkling at Blackheath, and the problem is that as I talk and speak, I actually overload people, and they have shut that down just a tiny bit, but enough to say, well, we can set it up there and it's less of a headache. So they have the Mount Victoria, so I say Blackheath, Mount Victoria building, and we can set up there 3 A4 panels and launch it. And one A4 panel is black with a tiny little speck. The speck of the size of a poppy seed. You know, there's little black things. That size, and it's a bit orange, and that is the size of Proxima. So if you can imagine how empty space is, I have one cashew in Glenbrook, and the next piece of matter in the universe is nothing, it is void, nothing, really at most a spoonful of matter between us and the next planet, the next star, Proxima, and that's 41 kilometers away at the scale. Now, the idea is that we have these three panels and we launch it. And get you there with the launching of it. And then, why not have a few more activities? Now, given that the eating activity is, there's an eating activity where you can bake a pancake on a scale of 1 millimeter equals 1,000 light years, fair distance at the scale, and you can bake a pancake. So the opening corresponds also with a pancake event where people serve pancakes, and the opening of the Worldwide Museum. There's enough there to get interest, enough science geeks to get some sort of interest, some sort of coverage, coverage in it. However, there is possibly more, and it's also interesting that you have not only got a star, you've also got a planet which is potentially habitable. It's a super Earth, slightly not huge Earth, slightly larger than Earth, and it's orbiting in our in the habitable zone. This is a zone where the planet could support water. Now, that's the plus point. The bad news is that the star is an angry star. It's not like our star, which is benign, worshipable. It's an angry star, and it's got a lot of its plate to go. So we've got that. So we've got the launch. We've got the pancakes, galaxy pancakes, and there's a process there. So we've got a few things there. Now, one of the things I wanted to do is add a children's book to it. So in terms of the outreach, and try to build together a sort of a scale of the cosmos. And we're there, and I was struck by trying to teach you cosmology. And the thing about there's sort of like two aspects of the universe. There's two vastnesses of the universe. There's the vastness of the universe. It's 93, I think 93 billion light years side to side. Yeah, 93 billion light years side to side. If you could talk there side to side. But there is something also almost equally as vast, almost equally as, or I say equally, is the idea of a consciousness. A consciousness has the consciousness of now, okay, the presence center, and that now is associated with a consciousness, and all other aspects, distances from that consciousness, are in the path of that consciousness. It's a pretty amazing thing. So we had it such that you put the watch up to your forehead, and that watch was now in sync, but as it went away, it went 3 nanoseconds into the past. Now, what is a nanosecond? A nanosecond is a billionth of a light year. Now, how do we actually bring that into a children's book? Now, I don't think we can actually get a hit children's book like I actually passed you the book called Baby's First Elements. And for me, that was really interesting because you saw the elements and they were new to you. The periodic table was new to you. You hadn't seen it before. And this is a bit of a wake-up call saying, well, we're so preoccupied of stopping bad government, we can't pause to actually load in the information to load forward. So what can we do with that? So this sort of children's book is a way of pausing and just getting the information out there. So what happens is that every point away from the middle of your eyes is in the past. So your arm is 3 nanoseconds in the past. Your leg, if you're 6 foot tall, is 5 or 6 nanoseconds in the past. The moon is a second in the past. And the way that it happens is that as you move your arm away from your head, your arm is moving away, it's receding from you, the clock on your wrist is redshifting. Now, once it stopped moving, the redshift stopped. But during that redshift, the actual ticking slows down, the number of ticks slow down. And so by the time it stops, it will stop 3 seconds slow. Then when you bring it to your towards you, it speeds up by by 3 nanoseconds again. So it's that this is Einstein, things moving away from you, the clock slows down, and moving towards you, the clock appears to speed up. Now, this really gets to it. No Australian who has been taught incorrectly Einstein and special relativity over the past 100 years understands anything. This is an absolute disaster. That is, we are taught sort of the point of Einstein coming in, and he sort of assumed that everyone will get the fact of a clock Doppler shifting, or he hasn't really thought about it. And so if you imagine, there's the first step, which is these clocks moving into the past. Then the next step, there's a step above that, is things in motion, and the Einstein thing is Einstein 1, and then there's Einstein 2, which is general relativity. And these are things which, so 0, 1, and 2 are all new. They're all something you just wouldn't get by playing around. The education is required to do it. And essentially, we in the education space have gone straight to one. And when people ask about zero, the zero thing, we shout at them, we cheat them, we punch them down. And we have not got a dumber Australia. We have got a punched down, broken Australia, because we haven't done Einstein zero. And this is really a second thing, probably making it worthwhile, even if no one turns up to the launching of the World Wide Museum. You can see how bloody noisy it is coming along here. I think I'll be appalled. Now, I should say that I do have a directional microphone which is pointing to my face, and hopefully it comes across there. So this is an important thing. So we've got this effect. It's a real effect. The sun is 8 minutes behind. You know how South Australia is and Perth is behind? Well, that's just behind because it's sort of a universal time. Yeah, you know, I can phone them up. But these people are actually behind. And look, the amazing thing is that when Nixon decided to speak to people on the moon, he would speak and they'd wait 1 second to hear him, because he was speaking 1 second in the past. So there'd be 1 second to reach him, and then 1 second, because they're in Richard Nixon's past, Neil Armstrong's, it would be another two, so there'd be a 2 second delay. So the telephone conversation between Mr. President, probably, I think it's been cut and remastered, is not like a conversation we're here is a conversation into the past. Now, there's this really super important thing, much more important than the Worldwide Museum, much more important than the Festival of the Pancake. And this is, i.e., that we get you cooking a pancake for it, is the children's book. And the children's book is, if you like, the key to proper education. So I assert that the reason people are confused is that the people who are teaching this stuff do not physically understand it. They don't physically understand it because they haven't developed the maths, because they have been bullied. And essentially, we have the education system in front of us of bullying. And if I can say, I think we operate on a system of where we want to keep people dumb and in awe and bullied. So we have this thing of writing. I've got a short while before I actually walk up to the gym to start this cognitive training. The idea of this, so I think the overall scene will start of Susan gets a new watch for her birthday, and part of her birthday treat is going off to CSIRO, and she meets a famous professor who speaks to her, and she cannot understand what he says, but his name appears to be Professor Mix It Up A Lot. And Professor Mix It Up A Lot says, look, you have a watch like this new watch we're developing. The new watch we're developing reads to not only a millionth of a second, a thousand millionth of a second. Look at it, it's got all these extra dots. But your watch looks identically the same. Let me put it together. Oh, look, they look identical. Thank you, Professor Mix-a-Lot. And then he shows them around, shows Susan around CSIRO a bit, comes back, and I wonder what Professor Mix-a-Lot will do. This is for the children. And then it shows a panel, shows Professor Mix-a-Lot with his new watch saying, well, it's not working the way it would. I wonder what's going on. And Susan has a watch. Oh, it looks like a few more digits on it. And she's in Parliament in question time, and is noting that the clock on her hand is different from the other clocks, and she does this moving it up and moving it away. And I know we'll get this in for a bit more of a story. And she wonders, and with the power of imagination, she's able to stretch her arm right across the house. So it's right across there, just bringing it all together. And, you know, there's the politicians on the side go, oh, what's going on? And yes, it is actually, if she stretches right across the house, it's actually 30 nanoseconds slow. And then, allowing her imagination to go, she pushes it through the skylight of Parliament out to the moon, and it's 1 second away. So this is doing the fundamental things of explaining the watch, explaining the experiment, and empathy and structure there. And then to the sun, it's 8 minutes across. And then eventually she keeps on going and going. But something funny happens in that the distances get stretched. And so when she stretches her arm such that it's 13.8 billion light years long, and even longer, I think it's roughly 40 something or other, 45 billion light years long, really, really long. It has to be actually long, long, long. She switches it up, and then what happens is that her, no matter where she puts it, her arm starts to go into the mists of the start of time. And she can actually see far back into time. Her hand is so far, far back in time. Now, the structure there, and then she can actually see the Big Bang and move her arm around left and right, and wherever she does, she touches the Big Bang, because she's going back in time to the same point in time, the distance time to go together. She comes back, makes a conclusion about Einstein zero, blah blah blah, goes, "No, I'm sure that I've made a mistake." And then she goes back, and Professor Mix-It-Up-A-Lot is just really, really upset. And says, "Look, I really don't know. I was doing this. Everyone should be able to have an atomic clock on their hand, the atomic clock wristwatch, because they're in space." And Mix-It-Up-A-Lot says how it's good and how everyone would understand. And then Susan says, "Well, I think I've got your problem. Look, this is the same." Explains, "This is small kids, so you've got a small aspect." And then Susan then re-explains Einstein zero. So this is the Einstein that's true, that he expects you to know anyway. And what's happened is that, so that's that story, if I can do, and I know you're a radio journalist and want to get into it. That story we need to actually develop. I'm just going to see whether my thing's on. It's on. Sorry, I've got to do this occasion. I do a podcast and the podcast machine's failed or all that type of stuff. And I'm coming up to the gym past this St. John's Road. You know, you live up in Warramoo. You have the trucks going past, but there's actually a rather nice set of Christmas lights, and it's definitely the thing to go. So there's this book, which I'm going to work on, and we'll see if we can get an illustrator in and try to bring it up, and so we can actually bring these elements together. Now, the main element is that, Mount Victoria Museum was hot, and now it's a little bit cold, and that's what happens. This is ideas managed by society. It goes hot, cold, people don't know what's going on about, but if you keep with the idea long enough, it will just rock through. And so for this, as I come up to this Anytime Fitness up St. John's Road, the idea here is to start to put out a few dates in the diary that we can actually get this to come across, and we can actually touch enough things, that is a solution that someone can see. It's got the element and small can has, it's got an educational element, a bit about Parliament to go across, and then obviously the Einstein zero, which is so important, because we teach Einstein one at school, and because the teachers are, well, let's say they don't have the they have bruff, bravado, all these things which you can have with academic things, but they don't have the academic integrity and the maths to get it right. And one of the things that getting the maths right is you say, well, that's the only way things can go. So thanks a lot. I'm outside the gym. I'll get things going now. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.